Good afternoon. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show on WPR News. We're going to take a look at taxes for the next hour and help answer some of your tax questions with a 30-year Wisconsin tax expert. And when we're talking taxes, it's the way we spend for things we're willing to pitch in and pay for. And if you were to try to get a big picture on it, you would say perhaps government is just an extension, an organized extension of community that tries to wrangle answers to two questions. One, what are we willing to pitch in and pay for? Two, how in the fairest way possible are we going to pitch in and pay for it? And taxes is where we try to answer the question, how are we going to, in the fairest way possible, pitch in and pay for it? Well, a new big, beautiful bill is changing our federal taxes. We have a federal tax deadline on the horizon, and we've got Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals joining us to help handle it all. If you've got tax questions, you can join our conversation over the next hour by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. And Mary, welcome back to the Larry Mueller Show.
Thank you, Lee. It's nice to be here.
And let's start with that one big, beautiful bill, which has now been signed into law by President Donald Trump, and what that means for our own taxes. What are the big changes that you see, Mary?
Oh, the big, beautiful bill. Well, one of the things that I want to say before we talk about what changed, the big, beautiful bill allowed a lot of things to stay the same. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 changed the way we do taxes and the way we pay big time. Had it been allowed to revert back to the way it was, there would have been a lot more people paying a lot more tax. The big, beautiful bill was an extension of that to start with. Our tax rates stayed the same. A lot of the benefits like the child tax credit and things like that were preserved because of the big, beautiful bill. On top of that, there are some other things that changed. For instance, things that people are talking about, the no tip, no tax on tips provision, mm-hmm. the overtime provision, increasing child tax credit. There is a provision for deduction of car loan interest. There's just a number of things that have changed, not maybe totally in the way people wanted them to change, or maybe it doesn't affect everyone because a lot of them have phase outs on it. But for a lot of middle class people, this means that they're not going to pay more taxes the way that they would have if it had not been passed.
All right. And with that, we will start going to the questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. And we'll start with Dave and Toma. Dave, good afternoon.
Yeah, hi. I have a question. I'm inheriting a house, and I don't want the house. But, I'm inheriting it from somebody that died. Mm-hmm. And my question is, I can't sell it until I transfer it to my name, I don't think. And then if I transfer it to my name and sell it, I mean, there's no taxes due on an inheritance. But if I sell it in my name, do I have to pay capital gains then?
Okay. I think that's a really good question, Dave. First of all, if in the will you inherited the house, that means transferring it to your name. The sale of the house, if it is not something you want, is a taxable event. In other words, you're going to get a 1098S that marks the sale that says Dave sold it for this much. It goes on the tax return, but here's where the inheritance is not taxable. The inheritance itself, the passing of the property to you, is not a taxable event in this example. However, with the passing of the house, you also received as its cost basis the fair market value of that property on the date of death. That being said, when you sell it for a price, you compare that sales price to the cost basis that was determined on the date of death. Generally, those two are very close together, and there is very little gain, unless you do a lot of upgrades to it, unless you're have a bidding war over the property and people want to pay you more. That would be the only way generally that you're going to pay more on it than you would. It's usually a wash in most cases.
Okay. Could the estate have done anything to sell the house before the inheritance that would have bypassed this, Mary?
That's kind of an up in the air question.
Okay.
And I think what I mean by that is, if you follow technically the wording of the will and it says Dave gets the house, that means that the house goes to Dave. Now, in some cases, you'll see that the estate will turn everything into cash and distribute the cash. But from a technical standpoint, if the house specifically came to him and not just the estate in general, technically, he's supposed to have the property transferred to him.
All right, there you go, Dave, and hope it helps. Let's go to Peter in Wauwatosa next. Peter, good afternoon.
Hi. I received a letter from the IRS telling me that my withholding is too low, so I'm now being penalized all the way back into 24. I paid about like 11. I got 1,100 in withholding and 9,200 in taxes. So I was wondering what kind of rule is there for how much withholding is necessary.
Okay, let me ask just a little bit back to you. The letter told you that you need to increase your withholding. Is that correct?
Yes, it did. Yes.
Okay. And you said something about 11,000 and 9,000. Let me know again what you said about the 11 and the 9.
1,100 in withholding from my pension, which is my only source of withholding. And I owed 9,200 in taxes.
All right. The letter from the IRS did not demand any payment, correct? It was an informative letter.
Well, I've been penalized back into 24 because I'm too low.
Okay. The tax return that we just finished filing or are in the process of finishing filing is the 24 tax return. So the letter from the IRS is telling you that we have the right, if you do not pay in at least 100% of the prior year's taxes, that would be the 23 tax, or if you did not pay in at least 90% of your 24 tax, then we, the government, have a right to penalize you. And the penalty is based on interest. It's a 7% interest rate. So the government is like a business. It needs to have money to operate. And that's why paying as you go, so to speak, your withholding is what is expected. So what they're saying to you, you didn't meet either one of the exceptions. You didn't pay in 100% of the 23 tax, or you didn't pay in 90% of the 24 tax. Therefore, your tax bill is increased by interest on the money, so to speak. So you do not have to increase your withholding.
Huh.
However, every year that you don't, you get to pay extra tax in the form of interest.
So that would be more
Does
than
that you, answer your
yeah,
question?
Yeah, that would be more than he would pay if he would just have 100% or 90 to 100% withholding to begin with, correct? Because you'd eliminate
right.
that interest.
It's a penalty, but another way of looking at it is you're borrowing money from the federal government at the rate of 7%. We want your money a little as you go, mm-hmm. and if you don't do that, we're going to have an underpayment penalty. And even if you file timely and paid the tax before April 15th, from the time that tax was due to the time you filed, that's the borrowing of the money from the government. And in addition to that, the IRS does have the fact that if you owe less than $1,000, generally you don't have the underpayment penalty.
Okay.
So they have provisions, but they expect withholding in a timely manner.
Okay.
And if you don't want to do that, which there are people who always have a large government bill, but they have the borrowing cost or the extra interest onto it.
So,
imagine if everybody waited till April 15th to pay their tax bill. The government would have a hard time meeting its ordinary obligations.
Sure. So Peter should increase his withholding going forward then?
To avoid the penalty, yes.
Yeah.
And if you are okay with paying that extra, then you don't have to.
Okay.
It's a decision that you can make with consequences.
As all decisions do have. Dennis in Afton, Minnesota,
yeah.
We'll go to you next. Good afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for sharing today. In terms of possible simplification, this is something I heard over public radio, that the country of Norway, what they do is they just send the citizens a notice. We know what your earnings are. And you're welcome to send them in. That sounds like a simplification and would probably get everybody in the payment category.
Wait a minute. Let me get this right. In Norway, sure. They just send you a suggestion to send your taxes in. It's like if you want to, you can, or
you can apply. This is what I learned over public radio. You can apply your conscience to it. This is what we believe you owe. And yeah, it's not a laughing matter, because I think in this country, people probably do not apply their conscience to the payment of their taxes, and that's how we get a $1 trillion contribution to the 800 military bases in 80 countries. I think Norway is giving people a chance to apply their conscience.
Wow. What if we had a conscience clause in our IRS tax code, Mary?
Well, that would be very interesting. I'm interested to know, Dennis, does it say any consequences if they don't apply their conscience?
I don't have any more details.
It's very interesting.
It wasn't the total program about Norway.
Yeah, I appreciate the perspective because, I mean, you know, different nations, they have all got their own tax collection system, and whether or not ours is as robust and effective as it can be. Are there changes that we saw to the IRS as a result of the Big Beautiful Bill, Mary?
In my perspective, the Big Beautiful Bill did cause some changes. For tax professionals, we have a part of the IRS that, there is a commissioner of the IRS that controls that, and there have been 7 changes since the passing of the Big Beautiful Bill, the signing of that. There have been 7 people that have gone through that office. We are on number 7 in this short period of time.
What's happening?
So from that perspective, disagreements with things. And it kind of tells you if you're working with the IRS and you're not getting answers to your questions, I think that there is unsteadiness or they don't have the thing who's in charge worked out. And I think some things get dropped by the wayside. And so hopefully the IRS, which in my opinion, we need the IRS. Maybe there will come a day when, you know, there have been ideas about not needing the IRS and finding a different way to collect taxes and things. But this is what we have for now. And people like Peter have questions about how come I'm being charged things. And you need people to be able to answer those questions and solve the things that are wrong. And so we need to have the IRS working for people the way it should. And so, I'm sure that means, you know, getting things straightened out, and hopefully that will happen.
So, and just to be clear here, we have seen a number of disruptions or changes, radical changes to the federal government in this year so far. And is there some degree of disruption inside the IRS from the perspective of tax professionals, Mary?
I think a lot of the tax professionals are thankful for the big, beautiful bill from our perspective. Because if, from our perspective, had this not been passed, we would be telling people at the end of filing the 25 tax return, guess what? Your taxes are going to radically go up. So for us, that was a saving situation. The other thing for tax professionals, that the timing of the bill was wonderful. Because the bill was signed, a lot of tax bills get signed in the 11th hour, if you will, that we have had tax bills signed in December, in January, that made it retroactive, which caused a lot of unsettling in the filing community. So having this bill and having time to look at its provisions before the filing of the tax return that affects those and be able to have a perspective into the future is something we haven't had for a while.
Mary Mellum is with Schwabadon Tax Professionals, and she's taking your tax questions at 1-800-642-1234. With the changes and some certainty with a big, beautiful bill passage, you can also email us, talk@WPR.org. That's 800-642-1234 to ask your tax questions, or email talk@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you're listening to WPR News. If you have not subscribed to the WPR Daily Newsletter yet, well, I believe you're the last one. It delivers you trustworthy reporting, unique local stories right to your inbox. It's one a day, not going to stuff your inbox. It's all done by our own Jenny Peek, who is wonderful and provides must-listen audio segments, exclusive feature photos, behind-the-scenes conversations with reporters, and you get it all in your inbox just by signing up today at wpr.org/newsletters. Stay informed and connected without being overwhelmed. That's wpr.org/newsletters. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today. Mary Mellum, our guest, tax professional, 30 years experience, owner of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals, and inviting you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Before we get to the calls, Mary, I have a follow-up on the big, beautiful bill. Ellie in Madison called but couldn't stay with us. She says that the big, beautiful bill is taking away energy credits, which make a big impact on her. What's happening to our energy credits?
Well, the energy credits in that were passed in the, I think they started maybe in 2002, something like that, we're supposed to go through 32. I can't speak for all of the energy credits, but there are a number of them that it sounded really good, and it turned out that people didn't get to benefit from it as well as it sounds. Because the type of property that you had to buy. Now, windows and doors and things, maybe not so much, but furnaces and air conditioning, which are a lot of what the consumer buys. There were a lot of other energy credits beyond that. But what it did was to put a deadline on it. So some of the energy credits, I believe the vehicle is September 30th is the last of when you can purchase it. The end of the year is the last for windows and doors and insulation. So it's that timing. But as much as it sounds like we're not pushing energy, you know, by the production of the bill, a lot of my clients put in the furnaces and the air conditioning and didn't meet the standards so that they didn't benefit from it anyway. And the standards have been increasing each year with this bill to the point where if you didn't, like, windows had to be the right windows for your area, that I couldn't put in a window that would work in the south and put it in. And so there was a lot of knowledge that you had to have about buying the right product. And if you bought it and didn't know that, you didn't get the credit anyway. So, you know, I think it was more a kind of stabilizing the ship right now. And, you know, things change all the time. And this was taking it back for right now. And who knows what'll happen? This isn't the first energy credit that we've had in tax law. There have been a number of them over the years. And who knows if we need them again, that they might not come back.
Let's go back to your questions now over the phone at 1-800-642-1234. We'll start with Sherry in Eau Claire. Sherry, good afternoon. Sherry, are you there?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Hello. Yes, I'm wondering what the percentage of taxes we'll have to pay when we're 73. Our income will still be about $75,000 if we're still working, but we'll have to start pulling money out, they said, from our 401k and things like that. What's the percentage you're going to have us pull out?
Well, the percentage, your required minimum distribution depends on how much is in your account. And the age 73 is when it starts. And there is a chart that is created, and if the chart changes each year, so theoretically, by the time you're 102, it's all gone, theoretically. But the divisor for IRAs or for your pension is 27.4 in the first year. So if you take the amount that you have in your IRA and divide it by 27.4, that will tell you how much you would have to pay, how much you would have to take out. Now, that added to the rest of your income puts you at a certain tax rate, and that's where you're at. And so I can't tell you that if you have to pull $10,000 out, you're going to have to pay 20% tax. You might have to pay 0%. You might have to pay 12%. It depends on the big picture of what you have.
Sherry, hope that helps, and thank you for calling. We'll go to Ivy in Evansville next. Ivy, good afternoon.
Hi. The money that went to energy efficiency didn't all come from tax credits. My brother in Maine, because they use the money to help people there with energy efficiency, he was on Medicaid, and he got a heat pump for $2,000, which I gave him the money. $8,000 was paid for by the bill that provided the money to Maine to do that. And so it might not appear in the form of taxes, but it did help people, and it's too bad it's gone, because poor people like my brother could get a form of heat that is not polluting, and, you know, for somebody has COPD like he had, it's helpful. Also, yeah. I think what I'm hearing is that this tax bill just helped, by passing it, just helped the people who help people with their taxes. They're able to understand what's going on better, but I don't think they could have passed a bill that kept the tax breaks for middle class people but didn't give these huge tax breaks to millionaires. So it's not a great bill.
Ivy, I appreciate the call and the perspective. Thank you. We'll go to Charles in Oshkosh next. Charles, good afternoon.
Hello. I'm calling about historic rehabilitation tax credits for historic properties. I know there's state and federal laws on that. Are you familiar with those, how they work for homeowners or
Charles, good question.
Give you a little perspective on the Wisconsin side.
Yep.
And there is, and I can't tell you without looking it up, it may be a 10% tax credit, but Wisconsin certainly does offer a rehabilitation historical credit. It's a credit on your taxes. It also is one that if you don't use it all in 1 year, it is you're able to carry it forward.
Oh.
What I know about it is that there are certain specifications and certain paperwork that you have to do in order to do that. And, you know, certainly if you purchase a property that fits that condition and you follow those conditions, it's a nice credit. And, but, you know, you have to do the paperwork to get the certification and the paperwork to get through it. But Wisconsin does offer a nice credit.
Mary, the way you say the paperwork, it makes it sound like it might be onerous. The paperwork sounds like it might be more than a few pages.
What I'm saying is that it isn't a credit that when you come to fill out your taxes that you can say, oh, I did this and I get this credit. It is a process that you have to go through and that you have to have your property to make sure that it is a property that meets the definition of a historical property. And there is certification or paperwork to get to do that. There are also things that qualify as upgrades that are in that. And you have to do that before the fact of getting the credit. That's mm-hmm. what I mean by that.
There you go.
And some people it's nothing, and other people it's over the top for them. It just depends on who you are. But there are provisions, and I believe that there are some at the federal level. I haven't seen those that I can think of. It's the Wisconsin ones that I've had more experience with.
Charles, thank you for the question. I appreciate it. We'll go to Bill in Wisconsin Rapids next. Bill, you're on the air with Mary Mellum.
Hello. I have a question about, is there an age that you don't pay taxes anymore?
Oh, please, Mary, say it so.
The answer is no.
Oh!
The answer is no. Now, that being said, there are 50% of the people do not pay any taxes. And that
income
is
taxes.
All conditioned. We're talking income taxes, yes. But that is conditioned on how much you have of income. And so if you have, let me give you an example. If you live on nothing but your Social Security, you will not pay income tax because the Social Security without other components is not taxable. If you live on income lower than the standard deduction, you will not pay any income tax. If you have a lot of income producing property, you can be 110 and still pay income tax.
Death and taxes, Bill, but that's the way it is. But it is a question I'm sure we've all asked at one point. Isn't there a point where we can stop? Probably not.
You know, it is very funny in our practice when a person that has paid taxes for their entire life gets to the point where they do not have to file a tax return. And for those people, a number of them, that's a very unsettling thing. What do you mean I don't have to do a tax return?
Right. Isn't the IRS going to come after me? Yeah.
Yeah. And, it is unsettling. It's something we get in the habit of doing.
Uh-huh.
We might not like to do it, but we do get in the habit of doing it.
With that in mind, we have an October 15th deadline coming up from the IRS. Who should be paying attention to that, Mary?
Anyone who has not timely filed their income tax return for 2024, that is the deadline. And that being said, it is the deadline to avoid certain penalties. If you owe the government tax and you have a proper extension, which is an extension of time to file your tax return, not pay your taxes, you have to fulfill that extension by filing by October 15th.
Okay.
That being said, there are penalties like the underpayment of interest and failure to pay penalties. And if you have not filed the extension, there is a failure to file penalty. So all of those things go in together.
Yeah, mark your calendar. If you haven't filed for last year's income taxes with the IRS yet, October 15th is the extension deadline without penalties and a price to pay. Mary Mellum is a tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Been in the tax business for more than 30 years. Answering your tax questions today at 1-800-642-1234 or by email at talk@wpr.org. What a service to have this opportunity to ask questions that are hard to get answers to just about anywhere else. So let's get your tax questions in before we're done today at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller, and you're listening to WPR News. Coming up tomorrow on The Larry Mueller Show, it is Garden Talk, and the author of The Cook's Garden joins us with recipes, freezing veggie tips, and canning tomatoes, and more. Also tomorrow on Garden Talk, Diana Elfuth returns to answer your questions about keeping your garden healthy and thriving through the fall. But right now, with the time we have left today on The Larry Mueller Show, Mary Mellum's with us answering your tax questions. She's the co-owner of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals, and I've got an email here from Paula in Oshkosh. Mary, she published a book of her husband's reflections after he died. He wrote these for church members. The books were then donated to their church as his gift to those who would like a copy. Does the cost of publishing qualify as a donation when she files her taxes in the new year?
That's an extremely good question. The creation of the books cost money. That gives them a cost basis. And if you are donating something to charity that that has a cost basis, it is generally the fair market value or the cost basis. So my answer would be yes.
All right. Barbie emailed us. They owed money due to a miscalculation and also owed interest. They agreed with their error and mailed their payment to St. Louis one full week before the due date. But the IRS says they received the payment a day late and charged a $170 penalty as a result. So Barb contacted the IRS, who were unbending, also contacted their congressperson, who couldn't do anything. When they mail their taxes, how do they determine how much time the mail will take? How do they know they're being honest about when they received the payment? Barb feels she mailed the payment in a timely manner by allowing a week from Wisconsin to St. Louis. Was she wrong?
That gets into another government agency, unfortunately.
Yes, it does. The USPS.
The post office.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So. It isn't an easy answer. I really feel sorry for her. I mean, I understand the frustration of this. And she certainly could file a request and ask for the penalty back based on reasonable cause. There is a form 843 that she could request that on. I don't know. You know, when you call the IRS and ask for that, you can get a lot of different answers depending on who you talk to. But filing a claim is a possibility. I don't know when you file a tax return and pay a debt, to prove that it is timely filed, the best way to do it would be to send, and I always get this mixed up, I believe it's called certified as opposed to registered letter.
Okay.
And a certified letter would give you an indication of when it's dated, and also the IRS would, you can send it such that the IRS, you have to have a signature, and it would prove that they received the mail. So if it happens again, I would be tempted to go to the post office and pay a little extra to get that date stamp that shows that's proof of when you mailed it and the letter that says we signed for it to see when it's received. That's the best advice that I can and give you.
Perfect. Spend a little more money to send certified mail to the IRS, especially if it includes some of your cash. And then save yourself the $170 penalty that Barb was had to incur.
It will give you more to fight with about it than not having anything to prove it. You know, it's not a guarantee, but it certainly give you more to work with than not.
Let's go to Jerry in Kaukauna next. Jerry, good afternoon.
Yes, I have a comment, and then I have a tax question for a sole proprietor. But down here we call it the big cow pie bill. It really keeps money going back to the billionaires. I believe 90% goes there, but the rest of the country hurts on services and, you know, government programs that help a lot of people. But my question now is, if you have a vehicle you use for business and you deduct the mileage of it, but you picked up another vehicle and might be retiring that first car, how does that work? And you're still going to keep it. You're not going to sell it.
Are you going to keep it for personal use?
Yes.
Okay.
If you have a business vehicle that is sold, and I know you're not selling this one, but in changing the vehicle from one to another, many people will sell that vehicle that's being put to rest. When you sell that vehicle, you have a sales price and you mark that against what you paid for that vehicle, cost basis, minus the benefit that you have gotten by taking the depreciation portion of your standard mileage rate. Or if you didn't use standard mileage rate and used actual, you would have that. And the difference between what you got out of it and what your cost basis after depreciation is the gain that you would pay. Or if it's business, you could even have a loss on it. Now, when you keep that vehicle, any depreciation benefit, either through the depreciation of standard mileage or the actual depreciation, stays with that vehicle so that someday when you sell it, you would have to take that into consideration. If you keep that vehicle forever and finally junk it, chances are that the most that you would pay taxes on is the cost to junk it. That would be the most.
Okay.
So, and again, you need to keep records on the business use of the current vehicle. You need to keep records on the business use of the new one that you're using. So I hope that answered your question.
Jerry, and I appreciate you asking it. There's a follow-up here from Merrick in Appleton about the Norway tax system. Merrick says it's not exactly an honor system. The Norwegian government sends all taxpayers a pre-calculated tax bill, and people are able to accept or contest the amount. And the tax rates are very high in Norway, but there's a cultural consensus that everyone benefits from good schools, subsidized health care, clean environment, and efficient public services that taxes pay for. So there are different tax systems out there, but ours, and I believe we've had a couple callers refer to this, a new study out of UC Berkeley finds that America's richest citizens are papering over their earnings with losses and using other creative accounting strategies to shelter their fortunes, as the tax code perfectly allows them to do. It's completely legal, and as a result, the country's billionaires, according to this study new from UC Berkeley, country's billionaires pay lower tax rates than many of its millionaires, and they pay lower tax rates than many middle-class professionals. Some wealthy Americans, according to the study, do pay a tax rate exceeding 30% average. The paper also found that top laborers, people who depend on high wages for their income as opposed for capital gains or corporate profits, have a 45% effective tax rate, that according to the analysis. There seems to be a difference here between how taxes treat the money that we work for and the money that works for us, Mary, and there seems to be, from some folks who work for their money, some, I don't know, angst or contention about that.
Oh, I think we could have a philosophical discussion about all of this. And you know what? We would come away with, there are going to be opinions on both sides. I don't know the perfect answer to tax. All I know is whatever Congress passes, that's what we have to work with as taxpayers and tax professionals. Leading up to that might be other discussions, but it's pretty black and white in what we have to work with is what we have to do when it comes to tax filing.
But what about the fact that our tax system seems to provide breaks for capital gains and corporate profits as opposed to the tax rates for folks who are working for their money?
You know, I struggle with that. First of all, there is a statistic out there that says that a large, very large percentage of the taxes are paid by a very small percentage of the people. And that never seems to quite make it into the discussion. And also that 50% of the people do not pay taxes and they receive government aid from those that do pay taxes. So you can understand, you can play with all of those things. But a lot of us, a lot of the people who are middle class people rely on pension money to survive. If pensions weren't invested in the capital gain structure and the stocks, there wouldn't be money in the pensions for those people to be living on. So there's a big, you know, there is a big way to discuss this as far as do we need companies to provide jobs? I think the answer to that is yes. Do people who provide the investment for those companies expect a return on their investment? I think the answer to that is yes. I don't know how to make everybody happy. And that seems to be the bigger question. How could you have a system that made everybody happy? And, you know, over time, I'm old enough to remember that there has been a discussion about flat tax forever. And yet it's never come to be. And there's a lot of discussions about why that's never come to be. You know, some countries have a national sales tax so that, and that's how they raise money, so that if you want the yacht, you're going to pay a bigger tax because you want the yacht and I have the rowboat. But we don't, at this point, for whatever reason, this is the system that we have, and until that changes, we have to be good citizens and pay the taxes that are owed. You know, there is due unto Caesar what is Caesar's and due unto God what is God's and, you know, all of that. So I can only play with what the tax code offers.
Right. You've got to follow the rules as they are written, and the questions about where they are written probably are better asked to other guests. Mary Mellum is our guest for now, a tax professional from Green Bay. She's been in the business for more than 30 years and runs the Ishwabanon Tax Professionals. Back to your questions and calls now for Mary, and we'll go to Diana in Sparta. Diana, good afternoon.
Hello. My question concerns a situation where a person is downsizing and donating items to charity. Excuse me. Would you speak to how a person should keep track of those items and determine their worth? And what limits would there be to that kind of donation, please?
That is an excellent question. The places like Goodwill, Salvation Army, if you go on their websites, they have a chart to help tell what the fair market value is. And when you are donating anything, it is generally fair market value that you're looking for, coming up with a value for it. And so, you know, knowing what a shirt and what shorts and slacks and dresses are, they do a good job of putting together a document that is helpful. And there are also software programs that you can look into that will help you with that. But here's some, first of all, for in-kind donations, you need to be able to itemize your deductions in order to benefit from those. That means Schedule A. But also, when it comes to donating stuff, there is a maximum $5,000 donation that can be done without having an appraisal. So if you are downsizing and have a lot of, you know, really nice furniture and you feel that it's worth more than $5,000, before you itemize, I mean, before you donate it, you need to have an appraisal of that, those things, so that it will benefit you on the tax return.
Perfect. Diana, thank you so much for asking. I'm sure you are not alone in that regard. Mary Mellum, a bigger picture question again for you here. When should somebody start considering shifting from doing their taxes online or with software to seeking out a tax professional? Where do you take that leap to begin to work with somebody as knowledgeable as yourself skip the just entering the boxes and calling that taxes?
Well, some people would say anytime I feel like I'm paying more than I should. And I don't mean that as I don't want to pay taxes, but that I might be missing out on something. I think it's a good idea to seek a professional. Now, if you have investments, if you're into cryptocurrency, if you have, different kinds of things like that, limited partnerships, rental property, a business, those are all times when you should seek help with it. And some people would say, even if I think I can do my taxes myself, you might want to consider once every 3 years to pay for a professional to make sure that you have time to fix, because there is a statute of limitation on getting a refund back on a return that is incorrect. And it's federal is a 3-year statute of limitations. Wisconsin has a 4-year statute of limitations. But some people have the idea that every 3 years I should make that investment just in case I made a mistake that I can't recover after that time.
And Mary, how often do you find somebody coming to you after using software, online tax systems for years, and how often do you find something that they didn't know existed to benefit them?
We do. Mm-hmm. We're in the position of not seeing a lot of new clients. We have a group of people that we work with, and typically we work with those people for a long, long time.
Nice.
So we don't see in our practice as many people. We get calls from people that get IRS letters, and that's where we hear from that and other tax professionals that there are times when questions can be misunderstood or things like that, and you have to clean up the pieces. And trying to clean up the pieces, getting a hold of people at the IRS to talk to is a little more challenging now than it used to be years ago. So all of those things, you know, point to a professional.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't be in this business if there weren't people that wanted to come to a professional.
Mary Mellum, you are an amazing resource, and I thank you so much for keeping up to speed on all the changes to our tax code and making sure we are in the know. Thank you, as always.
You are very welcome.
Mary Mellum from Schwabenon Tax Professionals with over 30 years' experience, and I'm sorry we did not get to all the questions today. We could have done it all day. And I want to thank our team for putting it all together and making it possible for you today. Clara Neipert, Joel Patnaud, Jeff Robbins, executive producer Jill Nadeau. I'm Lee Rayburn, and for Larry Mueller today, don't miss Garden Talk tomorrow from 11 to 1 right here on WPR News.